All right, it is your time. It is our time. It is everybody's time for your weekly dose of common sense. If you've watched the news this week and you watched the news last week and you see the stuff in Iran, you see the lunatics are taking over the asylum, like Marxists, like avowed Marxists saying, yes, this is the right, what's this guy, Hysam Piker guy? I mean, these guys are crazy, but you can find common sense right here. It's April 24, 2026. And if you were to turn back the clock, see what I did there? Went right to it. If you're going to turn back the clock to April 24, 1980, you would find Operation Eagle Claw was launched. And what is Operation Eagle Claw, you would say? Well, it is the Iran hostage rescue attempt, the failed Carter rescue. Isn't it suck? Because, you know, he was trying to do the right thing. It just, it was a disaster of epic proportion.
Yeah.
So Operation Eagle Claw was launched. The U.S. State Department of Defense attempted to rescue the 53 embassy staff held captive by the revolutionary Iran. Carter ordered it. It was a disaster. Planes blew up in the desert. I mean,
they ran into each other.
They ran into each other and blew
helicopters
up.
Helicopters got clogged with sand.
It
was a mess. I think, Steve, that, you know, our fact checker's not here, but I'm pretty sure that was the very first use of Delta Force in U.S. history.
It might be.
I think it was. Be. And, you know, lots of lessons learned.
Well, lots of lessons learned, but apparently lots of lessons not learned, because here we are again. And, you know, like this problem with Iran goes back beyond 1980.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
In other words, 47 years of dealing with these people.
They took our embassy people hostage. These people are, I mean.
Yes.
And, you know, before that, the Persians were sort of normal, right? They had colleges. The women were sort of in school, like on the streets, and life was good and everything was fine. But then
it was very
they
secular
let the
country.
Marxist theocracy take over and implement their version of Sharia law.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah.
And look, I don't care what God you pray to, but when they start killing Americans, I do.
Well, I mean, just this week, you know, as part of the negotiations, Trump asked for the Iranians to, you know, express a little goodwill and not execute these 8 female protesters that they had arrested and had a death sentence. And what they did, Steve, is just so inhumane. Before they beheaded these women or hung them, I'm not sure which, but they execute by beheading or hanging. Before they put them to death, they gang raped each of the 8 women.
All right, so
in order to prevent them, this is the part that's just unreal.
This is insane.
In order to prevent them within their concept of radical Islam from going to heaven, because if an unmarried woman has sex before she dies, she can't go to heaven.
Right, so it's
so they gang raped them.
It's not bad enough. I mean, think about that. Just think about this for a second.
I can't.
And tell me where in our Western civilization that this would ever be okay.
Where are the women's groups? Where are the liberals? Where are the people talking about the inhumane crimes? You can hate Trump all you want, but these people are despicable, what they've done to their civilian population.
This isn't a Jewish thing. This isn't a Zionist thing.
No.
This is people, like, think about this. Rape, the motive for rape is horrific enough, right?
Yeah.
So look, I mean, you can talk about it all you want, but raping women is bad in and of itself. But consider, like, all the bad motives that we would in the West ascribe to rape, and then add to it the final little needle in the eye, because now you believe that you're going to hell.
Exactly.
You know, because I raped you. Not only have I raped you and I've taken everything you have and I'm going to cut off your head, but I'm doing it so you go to hell. I mean, it's like, here it is. In Western civilization, we have this thing called the Ten Commandments, you know, and it's go way back to this idea of what is right and wrong. And this isn't a religious conversation, but this is sort of like the moral foundation for our society. And, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not whatever.
Steve, you're a defense attorney, and you know well all of the I won't say impediments or checks and balances before we execute somebody in our system. It might be 10, 20, 25 years for them to exhaust every possible legal avenue before the state can compel that person to be put to death.
Yeah, and there's people that disagree with it. There's people that don't, but at least there's something.
There's something.
And what I was getting at here is, like, we have this understanding in criminal law. Norm, you remember this from your law school days, I'm sure.
Yes.
There are crimes in our society. And I'm talking uniquely the Western societies, going back to the Normans and the British, and then we took it and made it better. There's a concept called malum in se, M-A-L-U-M-N-S-E, malum in se. And what that means in Latin is it's just bad because it is. Like, we understand certain acts, certain crimes are just bad.
Yeah.
And then we have another concept called malum in prohibitum, where things are only against the law because we say they're against the law. Think like speeding or jaywalking or whatever.
In other words, paying your taxes.
These are regulatory stuff. It's just, it's a crime because we say so and we've deemed it that way. But the fundamental nature of our criminal law is we want to make illegal things that are malum in se. And whoever says that it's okay to rape and behead protesters in order that they go to hell and stop their voices, that by every definition of Western civilization is malum in se. It's bad. It's just bad. And I'm not saying, look, does that justify an all-out war? Not necessarily. But you have to put it into the milkshake.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing, the Iranian thing, the rescue mission that failed. Another thing that, going back to the revolutionary period 250 years ago, this is basically the next couple of weeks leading up to, July the 4th, the next couple of months, I should say. Washington was basically preparing for the British to invade New York City. So he had stationed his troops on Long Island, and he got his ass kicked, is what's coming up. And during the Declaration of Independence period, the Continental Army suffered its first major loss. Yeah. And he retreated then basically up to the Delaware, and then we know what happened later, Christmas time.
Yep.
But this was a bad time for the revolution. So when these people signed that Declaration of Independence July the 4th, really were putting their lives on the line.
Oh, I mean, they
Ben Franklin, we either hang together or we're going to hang separately.
Yeah. And I think all of them probably reasonably thought they were going to lose.
Yeah, I would say.
I would think. Yeah. And, it's interesting. I'm not a scholar by any measure on the Revolutionary War. And I've said this before on the show. It's like there's historians that would say Washington's greatest victories were his retreats. And, he got out of New York without and saved the army.
And he mastered his skill at retreating when he was an officer for the British Army during the French Indian War.
Interesting.
So, there was this battle. So he had surrendered to the French earlier in the year. Then there was another battle and they released him. You can leave with your muskets. And they let Washington and his guys leave Fort Recovery or something in Pennsylvania. Anyway, he rejoined the British forces and later on was in another battle where the French and the Indians had killed off all the British commanders. And he, as like a captain, Washington, he was then the most senior officer. And even though they lost like 650 or 800 British soldiers dead, he was able to march out of there and save like 400 or 500 of them. And it was through his skill learning how to retreat.
Yeah.
And he brought that to the Revolutionary War.
Let's play a little psychology here for a second, because later on, so let's fast forward, how many years, 1789 was he, when he was president, I think he was inaugurated president. I can't remember the exact day. So fast forward, the revolution is over. We've got Washington as president.
Right.
And basically, they were asking Washington, just stay on.
Correct.
Just be king.
Many people said, just be the permanent president until you croak.
And he says, no. Yeah. He says, no. Which is, like, when has that ever happened? When has somebody abdicated power like that? And if you go back to this idea of retreating, here's my pop psychology. It says something about his ego or lack of it. Because there's so many people who would say, you know what? Dan the Torpedo is full steam ahead, which is, you know, we honor that on some level. But Washington knew enough to know, I can't win this fight. I'm going to get out of Dodge, even though sort of telling the rest of the country, look, you know, we can't beat the British. You know, it's like, he didn't let his ego get in the way, and he saved the army.
Yeah.
And think of that command decision.
That's right.
Like, we're lining up for the fight. He knows he can't win it, so he leaves.
Right.
It really, pretty remarkable.
And later on, saved the army again.
Did it in
Valley Forge.
At Valley Forge, yeah. Did it again.
Brought in Baron von Steuben, you know, to teach military discipline. Brought in a Prussian general, you know, to teach military discipline to the Americans. And they did close quarter combat drills. They really upped their game. And, you know, we went on to win.
We went on to win.
So
look, Troy has entered the game. He is our resident expert in the Army. We were, you know, Troy, on this date in 1980, it turns out that it was the hostage rescue attempt, the absolute disaster.
Which hostage rescue?
Oh, following the 79 takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran.
Oh, okay.
Jimmy Carter, President Carter, sent in the Delta Force to try to retrieve them, and there was a catastrophic equipment failure and some piloting error, but it was dusty and at night, and you're landing C-130s, and it was messy.
So Norm thinks that, we were wondering, is that the first use of Delta Force? Do you know the history of Delta Force?
I'm going to open up my laptop and figure that out.
I think it was the first combat mission for Delta Force, at least that has been admitted to.
I think special forces in general were like started operating after Vietnam, or like started, I'm sorry, during Vietnam.
It was JFK's idea.
Yeah, and then Delta would have branched off from that. There's a very popular meme about the guy who actually made Delta Force.
Yes.
And then he
was on site.
Yeah, he just now actually started using social media. So it's been very popular like this month that he's just telling his stories now about how he created it and everything.
The Green Berets were founded by JFK.
Yeah.
It was his idea.
So are these guys just badasses?
Yeah. So they recruit from all branches. Delta Force does. They mainly recruit Green Berets. I don't think there's like a reasoning for that other than that they speak another language.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, all these guys are badass. Navy SEALs, Green Berets, Special Force PJs, all that.
Marine Recon.
Yeah, Marine Recon. They're all super badass.
Yeah.
It's just, I think the thing that the Green Berets have is they're at least fluent in another language.
Yeah.
So it's very strategic.
So fluent, you mean like a foreign language? They speak foreign languages.
They do strategic language. If you look up Special Forces groups, every group is numbered, and then that number has a language they're tailored to. Oh. So then they focus that group into certain regions of the world.
Yeah.
So then that's how they, I think that's why they're most picked, because
Is it a requisite that you already know a language, or do they teach the language?
They teach it. So when you go through a selection process, you first get selected if you are actually able to participate in the program to be Special Forces. After that, they send you through Special Forces training for a period of time, and then they send you a year through a training program to teach you the language. And then after that, they put you with your group.
All right. There's a movie on Netflix. Who's that big guy that plays Jack Reacher?
Good book, though, is Chosen Soldier. They go through the entire
All right, book. You're getting serious. I'm talking Hollywood here.
He's talking fantasy now.
anyway, there was a movie where the guy who plays Jack Reacher, I saw it on Netflix or something, and he goes and fights these aliens. But
oh god, aliens! But he goes, cowboys versus aliens.
But it showed like he was showing up for Special Forces training, and they have to complete something, and I wondered how accurate that was, if you had any idea how that worked.
You're talking about like the brand new movie?
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, do you really fight aliens?
Yeah.
No, but
come on, man.
But I think, you know, some of those always have some semblance of the truth on how you end up being in.
Yeah. So he's going through RASP at the time. So
all right. That's what I was asking.
Yeah. So
what is RASP?
RASP. There's two different programs. There's like Ranger School, and then there's RASP.
He's going to be a Ranger, right? Okay.
Yeah. So he was trying to be a Ranger. Ranger, you see the tab. That means you're Ranger qualified. And then RASP means you have the scroll, which is like, that's the actual, like, real more badass one that you want. But if you have the tab, you get to wear it all the time, so everybody sees it. Ranger school is just the best leadership school in the world. That's just all it is.
Gotcha.
But no, there was no aliens, I don't think, at those schools. I've never gone, but
they didn't have actual aliens that you fought.
I've met a plethora of people that have went to that school, and I feel like they would have mentioned that they fought aliens there. However, I mean, they might have left it out.
Okay, and he started, guys.
And Jack Reacher started as a mechanic. and then he went to RASP.
Yeah, well, my uncle started as a cook, and he went to RASP. So, I mean, you can start anywhere and go to RASP, like any job at all. They'll take anything. Now, jobs have different amount of slots they're willing to give. Obviously, if you're a mechanic, you know, they're not giving a ton of those. They're not going to waste money on that. If you're an infantry guy, sky's the limit, man. They'll dump as much money to you as they can.
All right, so good. You're good for something here. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
What do you know about Hangar 18? You know, that's the Air Force. So. Some amazing things have happened this past week. One of which is this, the indictments, the charges against the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Isn't this incredible?
Just incredible. So we are finding out that during the Charlottesville riots and that whole confrontation, which Joe Biden said caused him to run for president in the first instance, because he said, you know, he just couldn't brook the evilness of the skinheads and the neo-Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan coming forward in Charlottesville. And that guy from Ohio drove his Mopar into some young lady and killed her. And Biden said that this was all somehow a reflection of conservatism, which I find incredible because the Nazis were socialists, as we all know. At any rate, it turns out the Southern Poverty Law Center was funneling money to these hate groups in order to stoke racial hatred.
This is incredible.
It was they claimed the first blush was, oh, we weren't paying them to be hateful. Those were informants. But it has turned out, according to the FBI, that we're talking millions of dollars, and it was paid to the leaders of these groups.
And look,
but not that, informants.
That defense is going to be, look, having defended such cases, these white collar fraud cases, here's what the problem is going to be with that defense. Norm, I am soliciting from you. We've created a 501c3, a charitable foundation, and our job is we're going to go fight racism in the world. Fine. It's a great charitable purpose. Go do it. You know, we're going to give you the whatever requisite tax breaks you get, or rather the relevant tax break, you get them. So, Norm, I need you to give me $1 million of your hard-earned money. Now, you're going to there's reasons you would give me the money beyond just being an ideologue, but, you know, you would typically find a charity. Now, if I say to you, my job, what we're doing is we're going to fight racism, we're employing people, we're out educating people on the streets, and you think that's a worthy cause, that's great. But what if I said, and by the way, I'm going to give your $1 million or half your $1 million to the head of the KKK, or I'm going to give this organization, these neo-Nazis, funding so they can go to Charlottesville and burn crosses or whatever they were doing.
Right. And trigger a riot.
Now, you could say, look, I'm okay with that if it's for informant purposes. So if I told you, look, by the way, we're doing this, but these are informants that we're paying and we're getting information and we're working with the government. Great. Fine. Now you could argue with that whether it's going to be effective or not, but at least you knew as a donor what you were giving your money for. Right. Now what's going to happen is these people, these donors, probably I would call that material information that they would want to know when they're giving their money to a charitable foundation. So like that's the crime, right? That's the fraud.
Well, so I have had this theory for a while, and I heard it first on the radio by commentator Barry Farber, who is a conservative talk show guy. And Barry, you know, is brilliant. And he's put out this idea, and I agree with him, that there is so racism of the violent sort, racism of the kind that maybe existed, you know, in
Jim Crow,
with Jim Crow, right, with the lynchings and hangings and preventing people from voting, that kind of abhorrent racism. Sure, people still hold biases in their hearts, but the kind of racism that used to happen, that people marched, you know, big DC marches and Martin Luther King and, you know, the NAACP and all of these organizations, which all did great work, the FBI, Mississippi Burning, and they really got informants about the three voter register people that went and got murdered by the Klan. And they really did break up.
They did great work, right?
They did great work. But there is so little of that in comparison to back then now that they're inventing racial hatred where none exists.
Right. So let's think about the motives of this. There's a couple different motives we can come up with. The first would be just sort of self-preservation.
Well, you're the one you mentioned already, fundraising.
Yeah. Well, so that's self-preservation.
Before Charlottesville, the Southern Poverty Law Center was bringing in about $40 million a year in donations. After the riot, which they helped finance in Charlottesville, it went to $100 million. So it worked.
It worked.
It worked.
Yeah.
Their investment in the Klan to get to bolster them to do this march resulted in
this
people like
why.
George Clooney giving them millions of dollars.
This is like if
it
if,
worked.
If I create a special interest program to go solve a problem, and whatever that problem is, say the problem is, who knows, pick a problem.
Yeah.
And I need 10 employees. They're each getting paid $100,000 each, yeah. And I need my own salary.
Like, yeah.
So I've created this organization. Yeah. We've got an infrastructure. We maybe even have a brick and mortar store.
Like the Clinton Foundation.
Like the Clinton Foundation.
Hire Chelsea.
So now we have a bunch of employees and my own. I've been doing it for 15 years, so my own livelihood is sort of dependent upon this.
Yep.
And now, lo and behold, I solved the problem. Now what?
Yeah.
I don't have a job.
Right.
Because the problem is solved.
Solved.
So what do I have to do? I have to create more problems.
Exactly.
Or I have to act like we didn't solve the problem.
Exactly.
And this is how, back
so
to
you've got these race hustlers, and I hate to use that word, but well, like
they
Al
are.
Sharpton.
Of course.
I mean, he just, like out of a whole cloth, Barry Farber would say, the worst thing that you can call a white person is a racist. That's the worst thing you could say. So people are on tenterhooks stepping around people like Al Sharpton because they don't want to be accused of being a racist.
Right.
And so he can milk them for millions of dollars.
And has. Yeah. So, I think it's also important to note when the government gets involved in this, the same phenomenon occurs.
It does.
So we create a special interest agency, DEI agency, whatever. You know, these people, it's not like they're going to go solve the problem and then stop. Because then they lose their jobs and they lose their livelihood. This is human nature, folks. And this is why Marxism always fails, because it doesn't account for the pesky problem of the fallen man, right?
That's
human
right.
nature.
That's right.
We all operate on our own self-interest. As much as you can try to whitewash that, as much as you can try to deny it, we all
that's
operate.
That's a fundamental thing behind like Adam Smith and the theorists of market
right.
forces, is that people's natural inclination, it's just built in you. It's survival instinct, right?
Yep.
You know, flight or fight. It's built into you to take care of yourself and your family as your number one priorities.
And this is why, and the only way to combat that, if you're on the Marxist side of things, is to create an authoritarian branch of government to smash it down.
Yeah.
And hold you at bay at gunpoint, literally. And this is why look, back when a liberal education still meant you get a liberal arts education, I had to read Hobbes, Leviathan, and I had to read John Locke.
Yeah.
And I had to read also, I read Gandhi. I read a lot
sure,
of stuff,
sure.
right? I read it all.
Probably read Marx.
I read Engels and Marx.
Sure.
I read it all.
Yeah.
And my first year in college, I read this stuff. So Hobbes would say, because of what we're talking about, we need an authoritarian government to sort of keep everything in line, because people always act under self-interest. And therefore, they'll kill each other in the wild.
Yeah,
there's probably better scholars than I. I'm going back 50.
Yeah,
a long time.
Lord of the Flies theory.
Yeah,
basically.
And then you've got Hobbes, or not Hobbes. Hobbes says that. Then you've got John Locke, who comes back with his treatise on government. I think two of them, and says, "Yeah, I agree with everything that Hobbes says about the inclination of mankind, but I reach the exact opposite conclusion." Because mankind has figured out that we can't just kill each other and survive.
Yeah.
You know, we will figure it out on our own. We have things like contracts.
Right.
We have created systems of justice to redress for when people are wronged. And it doesn't account for everybody. There's always outliers. There's always criminals.
Right.
and there's the criminals that we have to deal with in a justice system. But Locke has said, I agree with everything Hobbes says about mankind, why it's all, why we act in our self-interest. And that's exactly why we don't need an authoritarian government.
Right.
And Hobbes said you do. And we have built ours on the Locke model.
That's right.
And these people out there, the Marxists out there, are the Hobbes model, whether they'll admit it or not.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's my dime store philosophical history lesson of the day.
Yeah.
With that, I'll shut up.
Another amazing story. And this is another one that's just going to be fascinating to see how it unpeels. And it, again, it involves the FBI. It involves possible criminal charges. And that's the Ilhan Omar financial disclosure requirements as a member of Congress, where she and her husband, in a previous filing, which they have since revised, the previous filing said that their net assets are $30 million, up to $30 million. They just refiled and said, no, actually, it's between $18,000 and $100,000. Now, there is some big chasm there between $100,000 and $30 million. And she doesn't want to answer questions. And I think it's because, going back to your DEI comments, Steve, that she's checked all the boxes. Forgive me. Okay. These are DEI boxes I didn't create. This is not my fault, but she's Black. She's an immigrant. She's Muslim. She's a Democrat. She's non-Christian, you know, and she's female. So she's checked all these boxes, and the reporters, other than, say, I don't know, Axios or Fox News or Washington Times, almost no one will question her about this.
No.
Because she gets a pass somehow.
It is lunacy. So look, I mean, I get it. I missed a 1099 one year on my taxes, and I had to go back and file an amended return.
But if you ran for Congress, Steve, you would get grilled about it.
It changed my income by about $10,000 or $15,000, yeah. And I owed a little bit of money, yeah, in tax.
Sure.
It was one of those where it was an investment account I never looked at, and yeah, boom, I had a 1099 or something like that.
And you take the hit.
I took the hit. I paid the tax. I had to pay the account to file the amended return.
Sure.
And we fixed it, right? No big deal.
Yeah.
I find it.
And if you ran for Congress, that would be a public record.
The point is that it was like $10,000 or $15,000. $30 million?
How do you lose? How do you say I'm
how
worth
do you make that
million?
Mistake?
And then the next year you say I'm worth only $100,000. I revise that.
I missed a zero. I so missed a couple zeros.
Yeah, so something.
I'm sure there's some reasonable explanation. Probably.
Steve, you'll like this. I've said every now and then about some of the Trump policies that are, you know, and I'll get to one that I think is amazing, and they're great. One of his ideas that came out this week, this will just drive Steve crazy. So Spirit Airlines is about to, you know, tank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're basically teetering on bankruptcy, and they say that they're going to file. And Trump wants to bail them out with taxpayer dollars and hold a 25% government interest, like ownership in the company. Once the U.S. government would bail them out, unlike the car companies where, you know, Chrysler and General Motors, the government doesn't own a piece of them, even though we bailed them out. Trump's saying, and I think it's this Wall Street thing he's got in his head, that it's the president's job to save companies. And yeah, I don't know where that comes from. Steve, has the government tried to save your company or mine?
They tried the opposite, actually.
I don't get this. If Spirit Airlines is a shit airline, and they can't operate right, and they're not, you know, they're not profitable, they go down like any other company.
And both ways. So I guess in the Biden era, Biden stopped the merger between Spirit and, I forget the other one.
Southwest?
Was it Southwest? Yeah, Spirit and Southwest. Biden stopped that somehow, and now because of that, Spirit's going. And what the agenda was this, that, look, Spirit's a cheap, we don't want to, this is a great airline for the people, by the people. It means it was like rah, 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 the budget,
yeah,
people can still get on the plane. This is great.
Yeah.
Well, because they stopped the merger, now it's going under. So now we have none of it. This is like, when the point you're making is really one of economics, which is, it's not the government's job to put its thumb on the scale of private business. private businesses presumably either know how to run their business and make money, or they don't.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they go under.
I say that about Tesla, or any of them.
Any of them. It's just, look, you either can or you can't.
Yeah.
And when I've laughed a few times saying Trump's the first Democrat I voted for because he has these ideals.
Right. Like, that's right.
And he I think Vance does. We had Vance. We talked to him one time and I asked him about this. Like, look, the government can't fix all this, but they think that they can.
They have this tendency, you know, and I saw this.
To meddle in the private. I don't like it.
This kind of came out of World War II. You see guys like George Bush Sr., Bob Dole, a lot of your World War II veteran GOP Republican people, you know, the space program. They have this mentality that government is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And government can do all.
Until we got to Reagan.
Yes.
Until we got to, and then he tried to say, but even he, you know.
Yeah, right.
He
even,
couldn't.
Even he. Yes.
But, you know, he like his famous quote, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, right?
Government's not the solution to the problem. Government is the problem.
Government is the problem.
One of his favorite sayings.
Yeah. So it is interesting. Look, I don't like it. I don't like the government's thumb on the scale of private business. I don't care if it's a business that, I mean, look, the problem with this is that we have to put ideology or not, we have to put certain understanding, a foundational understanding in place because it shouldn't matter if we really like the business or if we really don't the business. It shouldn't matter.
That's right.
Shouldn't matter. Yeah. Whether Biden said, I don't want to save Spirit because, or I don't want to let Spirit merge because then its prices are going to go up. That's no better motive than Trump saying, I want to help Spirit because of blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Like the motive shouldn't matter. Whether we like the business shouldn't matter.
And this also applies to the state of Ohio. So my dad was a state legislator when Governor Rhodes recruited Honda to Ohio. Honda had no factories in Ohio. Governor Rhodes started that and he rolled out lots of incentives, right? Okay, you don't have to pay for this. You don't have to pay for that. We're going to give you the Transportation Research Center. You can own that. It's 2.5 mile or 4 mile, you know, testing center, and et cetera, et cetera. So he rolled out a lot and it's been great for the state of Ohio. You could argue that Honda now has 4 or 5 factories, and several suppliers all over Ohio, lots of Ohioans. And by all accounts, Honda is a great company. So let's just put that out there. What my dad said was, representing the Cincinnati area, is Ford Motor Company came to my dad and said, you know what? Our transmission plant down there in Sharonville, Ohio, you've done nothing for us, state of Ohio. You've done all this stuff to bring in Honda. Well, why should we stay in Sharonville, Ohio? Maybe we should move to, I don't know, Media, Pennsylvania, or Dubuque, Iowa. Why? You know, like... You're doing something for our competitor. You're picking and choosing who to help here, mm-hmm. but you're not helping the legacy companies like GM, Ford, Chrysler, Jeep, you know, et cetera. And, you know, that's the argument. Why are you, as a government, going, like you say, put your thumb on the scale, pick Elon Musk and Tesla as the company that you're going to give, you know, tax breaks for people when they buy an electric car, and then therefore Tesla is largely built on the backs of taxpayers. Well, why aren't you doing that for gas cars? Why just electric cars, et cetera?
That's right.
And it skews, and here we are. We have a different president than Biden and Obama, and this president wants to get rid of those tax incentives for electric cars, and you're seeing the market revert back to the level playing field. And people are like, well, if I don't get $15,000 off on my taxes or $7,500 or whatever the, you know, the spiff is, well, then I'm not going to buy a hybrid or I'm not going to buy.
Of course not. Right. Because it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any financial sense.
Right. Yep.
So,
yep.
The Supreme Court of Ohio made a ruling this week, Steve, that what's called sub-metering is regulatable by the state of Ohio. The PCO, they ruled in favor of sub-metering. And what this is on electrical utilities like Duke Energy or AEP, they are highly regulated when they want to disconnect or connect you or bill you or change their rates. The processes for all of that are controlled and regulated by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. But around 2% of Ohio's apartment buildings have had what they call middlemen, where an apartment building owner can contract with a middleman who does the billing and does the disconnecting and connecting and all that stuff instead of AEP. And then that middleman buys electrical service from AEP and then rebills it to the tenants in the apartment buildings. And PUCO said, yeah, that's okay. The Ohio Supreme Court said, no, baby, no, that's not okay. Middlemen, electric companies are now going to be, they're going to fall under the same regulatory constraints as the public. They are being viewed as utilities now.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of this.
It's interesting that a Republican Supreme Court would make that decision.
I don't know what to think of. Well, it's because it's the government. You know, because what's happening is, I think these resellers are selling it at a lower price.
Oh, the contention is that they were jabbing people.
They were jabbing people. Okay, well, maybe that's the...
Because it gets the landlord out of the loop. He or she then doesn't have to deal...
I don't know the facts to argue, to comment on this.
It's like property management.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
So we have, I forget what they're called. We have meters. There's like a weird, there's a quirky name for it, Wildcat or... You know, because I've looked into doing that here in my building. It's like we have one meter service and somebody's going to split it all up and do the billing for a different tenant. It's like, my building was too small and not enough tenants to do it, but I understand what's going on.
Well, you know, some landlords like include utilities, like it's in your rent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what that leads to when it's free, right, is tenants will just say, well, hell, turn the heat, you know, it's 40 below zero.
We'll crank it up.
Crank it up, open the windows.
I lived in a condo complex for a while that had like 6 units and we all had the same water. And the water was split up evenly between the units. And it caused a little bit of strife, right? Because what happens is you don't care when your toilet's running and broken.
Yeah, or you're washing your car every day.
Or you're washing your car every day. Or you take 50-minute showers instead of 10. You know, it's like, you don't care. And electric's the same way.
Yeah.
If you don't see the bill directly, then you tend not to care about how much power you're using.
Yeah. And this was a way.
Again, we're back to Hobbes.
This was a way to bill each individual tenant for the electric that they are using.
So I think what happens is it ends up saving the tenant's money. When I was told, because I was working to try to convert my complex. I was working with there was only 6 of us, but I was going to say, let's pay this company to come in, split up this water for us and bill us individually.
Okay.
And I was told by some realtor buddies who do property management that almost always the water bills go down. Almost always.
Yeah. Because now they're accountable.
Because people don't use as much, right?
Yeah,
so I don't know where the bodies are buried on this one, but I'll have to read the decision before I can comment.
Yeah. Another thing we've talked about on the show before, this ACTS, Ohio Tax Group, they need 640 or 620,000 signatures to get that, to abolish the property tax in Ohio, to get that on the ballot, not to abolish a tax, but to get the initiative on the November ballot. And they're halfway there. They held a press conference and said they have 305,000 signatures. They need 315 more over the next 3 months in order to put that on the November ballot. So it seems to be a real deal. Like these people are, there's some momentum there.
We shall see. I'll believe when I see it.
Yeah.
I'll believe when I see it.
What do you think, Steve, what's your prediction? If it's on the ballot and Ohioans have the chance to abolish the property tax.
I think they'll do it.
You think they'll do it?
I think they'll do it.
Wow, that'll be epic.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Wow.
This is like, I look at it this way. You've got a dike, right? So that's holding back the water. And if there's a leak here and you plug that one, if there's a, somewhere we're going to have to meet the budget either way. So you can
drastically cuts
the road.
Come
on, that doesn't happen. So,
but it'll be local, it'll be schools, fire departments, and local police.
That's right. So somewhere that funding is going to have to come. And so what I'm saying is you can say that we're going to eliminate property taxes, but it's going to be replaced by something. So you, as you pointed out, it could be budget cuts, and maybe initially it will be, but eventually the government doesn't stop spending money. It never stops spending money. It never rolls back. Yeah, we already talked about this. It's the same as the Southern Poverty Law Center. They're not going to say, look, no, we got less money to work with, so we'll start making cuts. No, they're going to tax you somewhere else.
So this is the flip of Florida's financing. In Florida, they don't have an income tax.
Yeah, but they have a huge...
But they have a huge property.
They have a... Well, and they have a huge tourist business. You know, they have hotel taxes.
So they have
and
consumption.
Resort taxes, and they have people coming down. I mean... So yeah. they have other means of income down there to do this.
Yeah, they do. So, but their property taxes are pretty high.
So we should get Vivek here to talk about this and we see should. What his plan is on the other end. Because, I mean, look.
And he has promised property tax cuts because he doesn't like this idea. So he's saying, I'll fix it. Please don't pass this thing.
Yeah.
But you think people will... I think in this economic climate with the cost of living...
Look, would I vote not to pay property tax? You bet your ass I would.
Yeah, no shit. I think I feel like you're right.
I mean, again, this is our, like for
I feel like you're right.
I love it when we find these little common themes to go through our show, because this is the same thing. We're going to act out of our self-interest. Like if I can save, like the property tax, I don't know if it's going to work for commercial and residential, but the property taxes I pay here in this building, it's freaking lunacy. I fight with them every 2 years about this, right. And they claim my building is worth all this money. And I'm like, and they say, what's your evidence that it's not? Tried to list it.
And didn't you get an audit? I did, because I have some property in Franklin County also. And I got a thing from the auditor that said the Franklin County assessment is being redone this year.
Yeah, I had that last year, and they raised my taxes and I fought it. The first year I fought it and I won because I just bought the building and they said it was worth $1 million.
And you're like, well, wait a minute.
And they're like, what's your evidence? I said, well, I just bought it for this.
And what could be
it was like
evidence?
Open to the market, and I just bought it for this, and I tried to get it as low as I could. And
kind of think it's worth it.
Right. So this is what the market says it's worth. I won that one. This year I lost. So this is another rat. You have to go hire somebody. There's a company that comes in and fights it for you, and that costs like 10% of what you save. So you just get screwed no matter what.
It is pretty difficult.
But in self-interest, people will vote. Like if I could eliminate the $30,000 a year in property taxes I pay, I would do it.
This is a weird little story. So it just merits, it's kind of a throwaway thing. I actually didn't know this, which is a shame on me. But in Ohio, when you run for governor, you run as a ticket. And if your running mate decides he or she wants to drop off the ticket, your votes for you don't count anymore. It's not like you get to replace that person. So if you have filed for the primary as a ticket. So this lady, a Republican lady in Cleveland named Heather Hill, she was an Ohio candidate for governor, right? She's on the Ohio, she was in the primary. She's on printed ballots. She got in a fight, believe it or not, with her running mate, a guy named Stuart Motes. And she said that he made inappropriate advances to her and used a racial slur. She's African-American. I don't know his race. But at any rate, he then, in a tiff, said, okay, I'm done. I'm off the ticket. I withdraw.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So Frank LaRose, our Secretary of State, put out a memo to all of the election boards in Ohio that they cannot count votes for Heather Hill for governor because her running mate dropped out. So now,
yeah, I don't even know what to think of this.
I mean, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's.
Just assumed you could pick somebody, kind of like if they died, I could say, "Hey, Troy, you know this person dropped off my ticket. Do you, you know, would you like to be lieutenant governor?"
Yeah,
I guess not. You can't do that.
Now, Troy must be a criminal defense lawyer.
Yeah.
You would be at least as good as Trestle as lieutenant governor.
I don't know what a lieutenant governor even does.
Cuts ribbons.
Oh, yeah, I'd kill that job.
You'd be good at that.
Finish up your PERS.
So anyway, I thought that was an interesting thing, and I had not even known she was running.
So what about, speaking of running for elections, what do you think about this Virginia deal, the redistricting in Virginia? This is a huge, monumental...
Yeah. And the judge blocked
seismic shift. The judge has blocked it, but I hear tell that it's a Republican judge and the Virginia Supreme Court is likely not to, the Virginia Supreme Court is likely to reverse the judge that blocked it, meaning.
That's interesting. So in Ohio, our Republican Supreme Court has struck down until the last one. I think Frank LaRose and the panels of Republicans, they took a redistricting plan to the Ohio Supreme Court, I think 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, this went on a couple of years ago.
Yes,
this went
on, and it was struck down by Republican Supreme Court justices until they finally worked out something in agreement with the Democrat Party, and they took that plan, and it passed muster. But apparently what Glenn Youngkin did as governor in Virginia is he created a bipartisan panel. He took it away from the legislators. They passed some kind of law or amendment to the Virginia Constitution, and they had a system until this vote, that the one that you're talking about, Steve,
yep,
until they changed it, they had an independent commission, equal both parties, right? Nonpartisan, supposedly, that would come up with these districts. And my understanding is in Virginia, Republicans are about 48% of the population and Democrats are 52. And the current congressional representation is 8 Democrats and 7 Republicans. So
it's about right.
It's about right.
Yeah.
This new plan is going to just completely.
It's 10 to 1 at that 10 point. 10 to 1. Yeah.
So I wonder if the Supreme Court can hold its nose and agree to allow this.
Well, so I look, the people voted for it is the sort of the hue and cry on the left. The people voted for it. Right. And on the right, they're saying, wait a minute.
What if people voted for slavery? I mean, there's some things that are unconstitutional.
Well, I think the process of the vote might have been, so what happens is, I should read the decision and then I can give a better breakdown. But here's what I'm guessing. You want to hear my guess?
He put a stay on it, right,
Steve? He put a stay. There was a challenge to the process. So basically, the Republican side of things says this was unconstitutional. The vote did not follow the proper procedures here in Virginia for such a vote, whatever those are.
So he stayed the certification that this had passed.
Yeah. And so the Republicans go and they file for what we call injunctive relief. They want a temporary restraining order preventing implementation of this rule or this new procedure or the new districts until it's the courts have time to litigate it all. And I've heard both sides. I've just doing some quick research while we're on the show. It's like there's people that say both ways, Virginia will uphold it, the Supreme Court won't. So we'll see. But really, I've heard different commentators on this. And one of the arguments is, well, let it all happen. You know, burn it down, because then Florida's doing the same thing. And then some other states will do the same thing. And it'll all sort of fix itself in the end. Others are saying, wait a minute, this is a huge problem for Republicans. And the Republican Party should have been in on this, fighting this tooth and nail from the nationally for tooth and nail.
Yeah.
I don't know where I am on it. I know this. I don't have any control over it here.
No,
not a darn thing I can do about it here.
It is another one of these actions like gun control. There's a couple of things she did,
she would.
She's going to do the same thing, but the Stamberger, the new governor of Virginia, she campaigned as a moderate.
She's far from it, right?
Yeah, and she kind of did an Obama, you know, campaigned as a middle of the road. Hey, I'm kind of Clinton-esque. I'm, you know, all about business and all about, you know, being moderate. And then once in office, you know, pretty radical. And so she said she was against, you know, this kind of gerrymandering when she was a candidate. And then once she became governor, she was all...
Yeah, she's all for it. I'm sure she'll decline to sign it, right?
Yes. So. When a loser, I'm going to do this loser because we talked about the U.S. Army at the top of the show. This is an amazing thing. So I don't know much about what they call the poly market or the prediction market. Yeah, I see Troy Tanya's head.
You got the exchequer over there.
Yeah, there's this Army soldier, Gannon Ken Van Dyke, who has been arrested for using his inside information, national security information that he had. He placed 13 bets between December the 27th of 2025 and January 2nd of this year wagered a total of $33,000 of his and made $410,000 wagering on the outcome of the Maduro arrest and mission down in Venezuela. And then he wired that money to a fictitious overseas cyber, what do you call that? These currency, the crypto.
Cryptocurrency.
Yeah. To a foreign, he created a false name to try to cover his tracks. And for, and the FBI's all over. Right. He's going to get charged with up to, he's eligible for as much as 60 years in prison for this. A 38-year-old, I think, U.S. soldier. So he's in serious shit. He is the loser of the week.
He is the loser of the week. All right, so my, you want to do your winner? Or you want me to get to my loser?
Oh, yeah, my winner would just, it's real fast. It's amazing to me that this Trump RX and Trump, what they call it, most favored nation status with the drug companies is starting to really work. So this week, the 17th drug company, Regeneron, agreed to provide free gene therapy drugs to America's poorest, you know, drug dependencies or consumers. And one of the drugs, RFK kind of messed up his math when he gave testimony, but one of the drugs involved, Steve, was $600 per dose. It's now $10.
Yeah, there you go. Imagine that.
And that's because Trump has this idea, shocking, right, that Americans shouldn't be paying any more than Canadians or Italians or you know, Ecuadorians or any other country. We should be getting the same prices, right? Most favored nation treatment by our own drug company.
Right. Right.
And if you want to sell to Medicaid, right, you have to be in his program. Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is the government getting involved. So here's the problem with healthcare. Here's the problem with all this. The government's already involved.
They're already involved.
Right. And so then it
and
just
we're
becomes
paying
this
for the research, the unfair part, like, so I used to be the lobbyist for Ohio's bus companies. Okay, this is goes back a couple decades. Steve, they would do tours to Windsor, Canada, for old folks, specifically to run up there from Ohio, cross the border, shop for their drugs, jump back in the bus, and come back to Ohio.
It's crazy.
So, I mean, there was drug tourism, prescription tourism.
I thought you were going to tell me they're going to Windsor to go to the strip clubs and gamble.
Well, they might have done that too, but, you know.
All right, Troy, what you got over there?
Kind of stole my biggest loser. I really wanted to do the gambling one, but there's some other news. There's one of the counterterrorism secretaries for Trump here. I don't know how actually high up she is. She's in this whole racket where she's having sugar daddies funnel her a bunch of money.
Oh, I did see this, right. She's looking for a sugar daddy.
Wow. But,
I mean, she's very qualified for that position of trying to find sugar daddies. She's pretty talented looking. But I thought that was just kind of funny. My winners, though, she's a loser. My winners, though, is I finished up law school this week, and I passed the MPRE. I found that out this morning also.
All right. So
what was that last? Passed what again?
Passed the MPRE, our ethics, like bar exam thing.
Oh, nice.
All right. Well, look, congratulations. My winner was going to be our hero over here, Troy, because he did. I didn't know about the MPRE until just now, but
I didn't know either.
Troy has now passed the bar exam. Or passed or gotten through law school. Now he can sit for the bar exam, see if he wants to do this job for a living. And he's passed the MPRE. So that's part of the bar exam. It used to be baked into it. Now it's separated out. It's called the Model Professional Responsibilities Examination. So they teach you how to be an honest lawyer. I dare you to figure that one out. But apparently Troy is qualified to be an honest lawyer.
Have you been fingerprinted yet?
Yes, but for like, you know, personal reasons.
other, yeah, don't worry about the fingerprinting. All right, so look, I got some other winners and losers. Another winner I have is, look, I've developed somewhat of a record sealing and expungement practice upstairs in my law practice of Palmer Legal Defense. And, you know, I did this as a means to add some extra income to the top line and even the bottom line for that matter. But I've realized something along the way. There is a such thing as human redemption. There is a such thing as
there should be
people making fundamental changes in their lives, yeah, putting their past behind them and being able to move forward. And I've done expungements and record sealings over the years, but like now I've got this like firsthand approach. I've had two young men this week, both of whom made significant mistakes and they're one is a juvenile and the other is a 18-year-old. And now, you know, years later, to go into court, I get to hear what they've done. Yeah, because of this, I continued with my counseling. I stopped using alcohol. I don't use drugs anymore. Or I was spending all my time in the basement on the internet. I don't do that anymore. I started a business doing this because I couldn't get a job because I had a felony. So I got enterprising over here. I mean, it's like really remarkable what humans are capable of doing when we let them do it.
Yeah.
And so I like this redemption that I'm seeing. It really, compared to what my other practice is helping people at their worst, now I get to help people at their best. So,
Steve, can I ask you a question about this? I know we're short on time, but just, I was at a federal court and I heard a judge, you know, I was just in the audience there to support somebody. And I was in a federal courtroom and the judge passed it, you know, his sentence down on a certified public accountant here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And that young man, I mean, the guy in his 30s, I think, and he lost his license to be an accountant. And it crushed me to hear that because it was overgrowing, you know, marijuana. You know, it was to me, okay, yes, that's a crime and he should be punished. And I get all that. The idea that you lose your profession.
You lose everything.
Steve, it crushed me. Is there any way that somebody who loses their law license, medical license,
It happens all the time.
Can they get that back?
It happens all the time. I represent plenty of surgeons over the years that had pill or addiction issues and got in trouble. And you know, we can get them through the system. And sometimes there's a way to divert them out of the system and get into treatment. But even if they get convicted, there's usually ways back for those kind of professionals, especially if it has to do with addiction. But not always. So look, I mean, a federal conviction is not expungible. You don't get, I mean, that's on your record forever. You've got it forever. And it's up to the licensing board now whether they want to make an exception to it. So it's not easy.
I'll bet not.
It's not easy. So make wise choices, folks. That was my good. My bad is I happened to stumble into somebody talking about this Hassan Piker interview at the New York Times. This guy, some social media, I think he was a Twitch guy, Troy. Is that right?
About Clav?
Yeah, I don't know. This,
he has a podcast of some kind.
He has a podcast, but he's a Marxist. He's a communist, and he's out there with his millions talking about the
Luigi Mangione.
Yeah, he's talking about how that was a good murder. He's talking about stealing is good if it's from a private grocery store, that's good because they bake it into the cake anyway. I would steal from the Louvre. He says we need that kind of crime, and he's totally cool with killing the insurance executives. I mean.
He accused him of some kind of, what do you call it, financial murder, that this healthcare company was financially murdering.
They were financially murdering people because they were dying, people coverage, and they were dying. Now, there's no stat, like, people just spew this stuff out without any sort of detail. But, and just so you know, he's hanging with the likes of Zoran Mandami, Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, Barack Obama. Like, these people,
are going on his podcast.
These are freaking Marxist lunatics who don't like our country. He says our country has no redeeming value. He's not a patriot in any way. Remember that because this is taking hold and it's scary stuff.
So let's pick an equally unsavory person like David Duke, right? Back in the day, he was Ku Klux Klanner. Can you imagine a former president like Obama or George Bush Jr. going on David Duke's podcast?
No.
Why would you go on a podcast of a guy who says murdering a healthcare executive by shooting him in the back of the head was a good kill?
I have conversations with my beloved Democrat friends all the time, most of whom are not into this. And I think there's like, I think we need to watch this very carefully because the Democratic Party is slowly being succumbed by this.
It is.
It's not the Kennedy Democrats of the 60s.
No.
You know, it's not. And they don't believe in the country. They don't believe in any of this. So that's why we're here, giving you common sense and explaining to you with real people who just happen to look at the news and think about it a little bit. So anyway, brought to you every week by Harper Plus Accounting. Our accountant could be yours. I'm sure he's resting on a beach somewhere after tax season. That's not true, actually. But
he should be.
Check him out, Harper Plus Accounting. Thanks to the Exchequer over there, Troy, our beloved co-host. I don't know what you are over there. You're something. But he's now going to be a lawyer.
Soon to be a barrister.
A barrister. It's not too late. I tell him every day.
Yeah.
But anyway, coming at you right from the middle each and every week.